Good evening. I'd like to call the December 18th meeting of the Tompkins County Legislature to order. Please join me in the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Roll call of members.
Mr. Dennis will be a few minutes late this evening. Ms. Herrera has asked to be excused. Ms. Kiefer?
Present.
Mr. Lane?
Here.
Ms. McAsey?
Present.
Mrs. McBean Claiborne?
Present.
Mr. McKenna?
Here.
Mr. Proto?
Here.
Ms. Pryor?
Here, and I'd like to have it noted that my thing isn't working.
I think several of the mics are not working.
Now it's working.
Thank you, Jim.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Robison?
Here.
Mr. Shinagawa? Mr. Stein? Mr. Burbank?
Here.
Ms. Chalk?
Very pleased to be here.
Ms. Robertson?
Here.
With 11 members present.
All right. Thank you. Proclamations, petitions, communications, and notices.
Communications are on the desks.
Thank you. I'd like to reorder things a little bit and start with Dave McKenna and the Distinguished Award.
Eagle Scouts, a tradition which I'm quite proud to say that I've worked a lot at when I was young, and my son did, other people did, and I know a lot of fine people that came from that program, and I'm very pleased to be able to present this award to you folks. I'd like to present Thomas Murphy and Anton Volkman, and I'm going to ask each of you to come up and tell who you are. And tell a little bit about your project, if you want.
Well, I am Thomas Murphy, mostly known as Tommy, and my project was to raise sufficient funds to buy books about Asperger's syndrome and donate them to all the schools in the Ithaca City School District in the hopes that they would raise awareness of Asperger's syndrome for the kids in the schools who will in the future have it and hopefully not be so alienated by their classmates.
Wow.
Hi, my name is Anton Volkman. My Eagle project was to remove and replace a flagpole at the LS Hollow Community Center. I had to secure the funding, secure volunteers, and conduct many work sessions to have a flagpole that flies a flag around the clock.
So, anyway, it's just really a pleasure to present this to you gentlemen, and I think you did a fine job. It takes a lot of effort to get to where you are. I realize how much that takes, and thank you very much for seeing it through. Oh, yes, I got to be by the microphone. Okay, this is the Thomas and his friend, and they are presented by Bangs Ambulance Service, Tompkins County Legislature, Cougar Radio Group, Purity Ice Cream, A&B Awards and Engraving. And congratulations to you both, and I have some more goodies for you.
Thank you both.
Wow.
Thank you, Tommy and Anton. Thank you, Dave. Appreciate that. And congratulations. We have some people. Okay, we have public privilege of the floor. I have a couple of people signed up. If anybody else would like to speak after these folks, you'll have a turn. Just go to the mic and say your name. Please respect this 3-minute time limit, and Kathy will help people keep track of that. Simon St. Louis and Faye Gugakis.
Excuse me, this is our Civil War presentation.
That's right.
And could we please have the other members of the Civil War Commission come up with stand behind Simon? Frank? Marsha? I'm going to do that too.
Sounds good.
Welcome.
I'm Simon St. Lawrence. I live in the town of Dryden. I'm a member of the Tompkins County Civil War Sesquicentennial Commemoration Commission. I think just saying that used up most of my time. I'm proud to serve with Mike, with Marsha, with Frank, and with various other folks who have been doing a lot to remember our Civil War past. Kind of a highlight this past year, which is in the photos that we're presenting to the legislature. Hopefully you can find a nice place for them. Was a Civil War encampment that was on Route 13 at the Ithaca Volunteer Firemen's Association land. We had about 300 people show up for a pretty amazing Saturday and Sunday. Perfect weather for a dramatic way to revisit what's happened in the past. We've also sponsored movies. We've sponsored books. We've been at work in the cemeteries cleaning up the graves of escaped slaves and of Civil War soldiers. We have a lot more of that to come. We are sponsoring a lecture series as well, and we would definitely encourage you to come to that and to many of our other events. So we hope to see you there, and we'll do our best to keep remembering Tompkins County's past. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Simon. We really appreciate the work that all of you do.
Can I just say that the photographer for those photos was Simon St. Lawrence.
Thank you all very much for enriching the community in that way. Faye Gugakis, and that's the last person signed up.
Good evening, everyone. Faye Gugakis, City of Ithaca. Want to wish you all a happy holiday and hopefully a good new year. I wanted to just make a brief comment about what has happened in Connecticut, and then I want to talk about what I was here to talk about. I've been watching the news and, like everyone, feeling sad and horrified. But one of the things that I feel even more angry about is the lack of discussion of violent video games. Our children are not only gaining weight, unhealthy weight, they are watching hours and hours and hours of violent, violent beyond means video games. Okay? They are exposed to this. And the digital world is not making it any better at all, because now it's portable, okay? So I'm not going to go too much into this because I don't have time, but I want you all to think about this, because this is not what's being discussed. They're only talking about guns, and I'm not saying that that's important too, but we have to look at what our children are spending hours watching, okay? And when I see psychologists interviewed and they're not talking about this on mainstream news programs, it is very upsetting, because those people making those violent video games, they're making a lot of money. Those people should be locked away. Those people's brains should be examined, because they are very unhealthy to create these kinds of games and images for our youth. Now, the second thing I want to talk about is Peter Stein called me up so I can go to the safety committee, which I attended, and I was very grateful to be aware of that meeting, and I went to it. But what I didn't like is the fact that when I spoke, I was not able to get a response from anybody on that committee, okay? Also, the statistics that were presented, I feel, were inadequate. There were 20. I don't have them with me because I'll bring them next month, because I'm getting ready for the holiday and I have a wake to go to after this. Okay, there were 20 items that were presented, 20 important to the group. Okay, there was nothing about texting. There was nothing about tinted windows. Now, Peter Stein brought up the issue of tinted windows because Martha talked about a resolution. I think as leaders, you should know already that it is illegal to have a certain percentage of tinted windows. The fact that I've been here so many times and you were not aware that that was illegal is very upsetting to me. Now, with that said, okay, there needs to be a resolution. What I've been asking is a resolution to write to Schumer, to write to Hinchey, to write to Cuomo, to write to the president that tinted windows are not acceptable. It is a safety issue, which the sheriff, previous to the meeting, agreed with me. And also, the Indica Police Department agrees with me. It is very irresponsible for all the public leaders to allow this to continue. The manufacturers have to stop creating, manufacturing these windows, okay? On top of the texting that is continuously going on 24/7, because this is what people are doing all the time, and I can see it because I'm on a higher level on my bike looking down. Recently, I spoke to another cyclist. I asked him to come here and speak. They don't want to do it, but they said the tinted windows is a problem. Now, I don't know why other people don't come to you. I know that it's a problem, but it's my duty as a concerned citizen, as a cyclist, as a person who cares about sustainability, that this is not good for all of us. Now, I don't understand
why it's
not getting through. But I'm not going to be disrespected, and I feel disrespected. I mean, I go to this meeting where I wasn't given any feedback. You know, why bother go to a meeting where I don't get any feedback?
Thank you, Faye. Please wrap up. Thank you. Would anyone else like to address the legislature? Well, thank you. I apologize. I was planning to do a moment of silence, and I think I got caught up in moving the Distinguished Youth Award. I think that would have been an appropriate way to start the meeting. So if we can just hit replay. I do think all of us have been changed by what happened on Friday in Connecticut. I hope the country's been changed in a good way. I hope we can look at all the kinds of things that affect, that create those kinds of events, those kinds of behaviors, including video games, including lack of mental health services in schools and communities, and certainly including access to firearms. So it's just a travesty that it took this kind of event to get our country seriously talking about these issues. So if you'll just join me in a moment of silence to reflect on what's happened. Thank you. So with that, legislators, anyone? Will.
Thank you, Martha. And thank you, Faye, for pointing to one of the elements that I think goes into this toxic soup that we live in, that is creating the violence that arose to all of our consciousness last Friday. I must admit, when I first heard the news story that there had been yet another shooting, this one in a school in Connecticut, my first impulse was to shrug. I mean, wasn't it a couple days before that there was a shooting out in Portland, Oregon, two people killed in a mall? I guess the shooter killed himself. And wasn't earlier this month when there was a tragic story of a football player in Kansas who killed his girlfriend, then went and spectacularly committed suicide. But those, you know, have become so commonplace that it just sort of rolls off. We don't think of it. You know, another one. What's going to happen? Yet what happened Friday with 20 elementary school children and 6 adults just being unbelievably mowed down, I think shocked all of us. And it hopefully has moved us out of our complacency. Our president went to the site and spoke eloquently and called for a national conversation. And I hope that, in fact, happens. I hope it happens at all levels. And what I wanted to do here is try to get us thinking about what we would like to see happen at the state and federal level and come up with a call from this body. And I will be sharing some ideas I've had. I would welcome any other people to work with me, and I hope to have something at our next meeting. But this is the time for action, and we have got to know that we can do something. Even if we will never solve everything, we have to do something. I welcome everybody's help with this effort. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Will. Leslin?
Well, Will, you certainly have mine. And as always, Faye, thank you for coming and speaking with us, and thanks for being at a Public Safety Committee meeting as well. Like many other people out there, goodness knows how close to my heart that incident hit. You know, I have a 6-year-old in an elementary school, and I just the thought of, you know, hearing something like that and thinking, if that had happened at Indira School, what would I do and where would I be? And thinking, does she know what to do if something like this happened? And then thinking beyond that, she shouldn't know what to do because we shouldn't have these things happening, you know. And I have just been just so sad about the entire thing that, you know, it took my daughter saying to me, you know, she was just this morning, she said, okay, you continue to have sad tears. Maybe you should just stop watching the news about this and let's think of other things we could be doing. And I said, you know, thank you, because I kept thinking of all the sad things without really thinking what should we be doing. So I'm more than happy to join you in that effort that we need to send a very strong message about what our expectations are around violence, around gun violence, just about human sustainability from the ground level up. It's very, very important. And Martha, I appreciate the moment of silence and the thoughts I know around this table about just what people are going through. It was indeed a shocker. I want to move to a more happy note and make an announcement. I've been thinking about just people in our community who are less fortunate, and this is a time of year that we think of it. You know, we send our donations, we, you know, do all kinds of things. And I put out a call to friends and relatives and whomever, because I understood that the places that normally would serve a meal where people go to eat, like Loaves and Fishes and the Salvation Army, would be closed on Christmas Day. And I thought, wow, I'd sit at home and have my meal, and there'd probably be people out there who wouldn't have a meal. So I put out a call, and many people responded for us to prepare a meal to be served at Loaves and Fishes on Christmas Day. So they will be open on Christmas Day, and I want people to know that. And a lovely Christmas meal will be served. Yes, I will be cooking, and so will a number of other people in the community, so that we can serve a meal to folks who otherwise might not have a meal on Christmas Day. And so we're happy to do that. I invite you all, if you're not doing anything, to come on down and put some hours in volunteering, or come down and just fellowship. Eat and fellowship. Bring your family. We'll be there. Let me make sure I got the time right. It will be served from 2 to 3, I think it is, yes. Loaves and Fishes will serve a special Christmas meal from 2 to 3. The doors will be open at 1:30. So please spread the word. Tell folks that, you know, the meal is on Christmas Day, and they can come on down and eat. Thank you. That's terrific, Leslie. Thank you very much.
Appreciate that. Pam?
Could I just ask Leslin a question? So do you need money to help defray the cost of this?
Loaves and Fishes always needs money.
Good response. Very good.
But if you'd like to, donate something, we will not turn it down.
Leslin, I'm actually surprised. I thought there usually are meals like Salvation Army. Yeah.
The Salvation Army usually is.
Everybody is just so strapped. Okay. Our food pantries are falling short of food to give out. I mean, everything. People are just so strapped. So when you think of your holiday donations, think of those places.
Okay. Thank you very much. Glad to have the news. Anyone else? Carol?
I'll just encourage everybody to have a very safe set of holidays. While you're rushing around trying to get ready, and we seem to all be busier and busier, just please remember to drive very carefully. Don't be in a rush for a parking spot. There'll be another spot there, maybe a little further away. And just drive carefully. Thanks.
Thank you. Anyone? Brian?
Just real quickly, I want to thank several people, and I'm going to leave people out, so I'm not even going to try. But within the last probably 10 days, very quickly, F&I had this whole Bailey Bridge that was purchased. It went to F&I. Through a coordinated effort with Jeff Smith and Don Lattman. I know the entire committee. Peter actually came up to Groton. I had to work that evening and got home got to the meeting a little bit late. But we were able to engage members of the public there at that meeting. And I think that's the way it's supposed to be. Everybody was engaged that needed to be engaged. It actually happened quickly. That doesn't often happen in government, but I have not followed up with Jeff this week, but I do believe that I know he wants to get it in, because we have no turnaround for plows at the end down there, and looks like the weather's going to cooperate, and it really doesn't take a tremendous amount of time, so it looks like that's going to get in there. And then we'll have the discussion in a year or two on a permanent solution, maybe. We'll see how that goes. But thanks to everybody on F&I for our little northeast corner of the county. Everyone appreciates it, and thanks again. I'm not going to belabor what happened in Connecticut. Obviously, it's unspeakable. I'm actually glad that you've already heard two or three peripheral things other than just gun control here tonight, and all of them deal with things that are currently amendments or federal laws, HIPAA laws, all of that stuff. So a real hard look is going to have to be taken on a grand scale on a whole bunch of things, including Leslin, you kind of just mentioned it, but when this very first started, when these sorts of things come up, I tend not to watch them. I just choose not to. You get the bare facts and just let it go. But I was speaking to my wife, and obviously it was like Friday early evening, and it was so horrible that I said, this is going to be on non-stop for days, maybe weeks. I'm not sure because I don't watch it, but I'm going to take a guess that it's still going. So, and I understand that they're not mentioning the name of the perpetrator, but it's still being played, and it's still going on and on and on. And that sort of sensationalism from the media has a little bit to do with some of this too. So now you're talking about another amendment that you may want to think about. So for those folks that think it's simply gun control, I would have to disagree. And, you know, I will say that, yes, meaningful gun control change legislation does need to occur. I'll be happy to help you.
Thank you, Brian. Anyone else? Mike? Okay. Mike, then Frank, and Dooley, and Will. All right, I better write it down. Okay. Go ahead, Mike.
Will, I think you were right on this issue when you talked about it being a soup. And Brian, you're right. It's a combination of factors, but gun control has to be looked at as well, as mental health and other things. And I guess I disagree with our future congressman's statement this morning that that should be exempt from being looked at. In 2004, Congress allowed the assault weapon ban to expire. And would that have prevented this? No, but we need to do things that help change the mindset. At our last meeting, 2 weeks ago, I brought up again about the fact that this legislature chooses its leadership every year, and that we'll be doing that again at our organizational meeting. And I called on the process. I called for the process to be open. I think we started to open it last year. I said that I thought folks who are interested in being chair or vice chair ought to say that, so that they can be it can be discussed openly with other members of the legislature, with other members of the community, and with the press. And having said that, I want to mention tonight that I will be throwing my hat in the ring for chair again this year. Thank you.
Thank you, Mike. I got Frank Dooley. See if I missed anybody. Frank Dooley, Will, Leslin, Carol. Anybody else? Okay. Frank.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair. First, I'd like to acknowledge that Carol is here without a wheelchair. And it's nice to see you back. Well, that's okay. You can have your protective breastplate on. But it's nice to see you. But that doesn't mean you can talk incessantly tonight.
Frank will instruct
you. On another,
look who's talking.
I'm the worst one to be saying that. I'm not going to belabor what's already been said about the situation in Connecticut, but just to encourage you all, the Human Services Coalition and a couple of other organizations around town in Leslin began to allude to a lot of them. Christmas is a week from today. However you choose to celebrate the holiday coming up, please spend some time volunteering somewhere. Someone has already said there are a lot of people that could use a lot of help, regardless of whether it's food or whatever. The Family Reading Partnership and Amy Dickinson sponsoring a program of providing a book for each child for Christmas Day. So if you're looking for a project to buy into, if you will, that's certainly a worthwhile one. And I'm glad Faye Gougakis is here, because not to talk about tinted windows or cell phones, but isn't Friday the Greek bake sale?
Yes, it is.
So I just want to tip you off that if you haven't put your order in, today's Tuesday, you might get shortchanged. Say again? They stopped accepting orders. So unless you get there at 4 in the morning and you're in line early, or you know Faye, you're probably going to not get your...
Frank, don't give me any credit. I had nothing to do with the baking. But I do recommend you go. I think it starts at 7.
At 7? Thanks,
Faye.
Anyway, thank you, Madam Chair.
But they do run out pretty early, so.
You're not kidding, by 7:30.
And thanks to the community for buying it.
Thanks.
Okay, Dooley, then Will.
Will, I look forward to working with you to
figure out what we might put in a resolution. I just wanted to call everybody's attention to the fact that 2012 is the 20-year anniversary of our Metropolitan Planning Organization, the MPO, which is known as the Ithaca-Tompkins County Transportation Council. And there was a joint meeting of the Policy and Planning Committees this afternoon. And we realized that Bill Gray, who is one of the founding members of that organization, is retiring. And Svante was there and shared some of the rather personal resolutions that Common Council passed in his regard, which were embarrassing to Bill. So at the council, we do much more formal resolutions, but people wanted to personalize those too. The main thing that I want to say publicly is we have been incredibly fortunate to have had Fernando de Aragon as our director of that organization. He's the second director, but he's been there for a very long time. And he showed everybody what the MPO has been able to achieve in the most recent 10 years and in the first 10 years. And it's amazing what this really small organization has been able to do in managing, finding grants and bringing them into the community. So I hope they don't get much, although they don't get much publicity, that everyone will appreciate what they have done and are continuing to do.
Thank you, Dooley. Will.
Thank you, Martha, and I apologize for taking a second bite at the apple. Last night I was driving to Syracuse to pick up our daughter and granddaughter, so I was not able to attend a meeting that happened here, and hopefully Martha or somebody else who was there will give us a full report. But I got a partial report by listening to this station I told you about last month, which is our local community radio station, Ithaca Community Radio, 88.1, and they sent somebody to this meeting that was having to do with responding to the fracking health regulations, and gave a little, we heard Martha and Tony Ingrafia and Sandra Steingraber, and a link to a very, very good site, which hopefully, once again, we'll get all familiar with. And Helen, thank you, yes, which is 30 Days of Fracking
Regs.com.
And so please, somebody who was there, speak more. Thank you.
Okay. Thanks, Will. Yeah, I was planning to talk about it. I've got Leslyn, Carol, and Pat.
This is quick. I forgot. I was remiss in not announcing also that on the 29th of December, the Southside Community Center celebrates Kwanzaa. And the community is invited to come down to the South Side from 5 to 7, I think, for the official Kwanzaa celebration here in Tompkins County at Southside Community Center. So please mark your calendars and come on down. We'd love to see many people there celebrating this special occasion. Thanks.
Thank you, Leslyn. Carol.
Yeah, I raised my hand again for two reasons. One was to talk about what Will just did. People should really go to the site, 30 Days of Fracking Regs, all one word, .com. Sandra Steingraber and others have done an incredible job of making the revised regulations for gas drilling, high volume, slick water, hydrofracking, accessible to the rest of us. You don't have to read all 200 and some odd pages of the regs and compare them to the regs that they are revising, which are no longer available on the DEC website. You can take one at a time. There are very thoughtful comments, but short and concise, with pointers about how you can personalize and write your own comments. And it's all done one day at a time. Each day there's another, like an advent calendar, with ties to things that are going on each particular day. There were ties to Hanukkah. There are apparently going to be ties to Kwanzaa. Yesterday was Beethoven's birthday, and that was tied in as well. And it's sort of done in a very light way. But the important thing, most important message that Sandra gave last night, which I really agree with, is that silence is consent.
Exactly.
The process calls for these regulations to be put out there, and unless the DEC hears back about whether what it is we like or don't like about them, the presumption is that we agree with them. And in my case, nothing could be further from the truth. So, please, I hope that some of you share that, and so please take the time. We're hoping for thousands and thousands of comments. Again, it's the only thing that will continue the conversation. I also raised my hand. Brian, I would have waited until the F&I report to talk about some of the projects that we've been working on, but I want people to be aware that this meetings like this, like taking the Groton City Road Bridge project to the Groton the town board, this is part of our plan to make sure that all of the projects that we're working on are out there, discussed in the community, and that's been a policy all year. And to step that up, the ways that we're doing that, we have the Waterbury Road Bridge project. I get called. We're not doing anything further on that yet. But this Thursday night, we will be doing another public information session on Pine Tree Road. This time, we're on Pine Tree Road South. This is this Thursday night, December 20th, 7 p.m. at the Trinity Lutheran Church on Hannes Lane. We will be asking for input from the community. As we talked about the Pine Tree Road pedestrian path project and bridge project that we're working on, we heard from residents who live a half a mile down the road and more, talking about the impact, the concern about the impact on their part of the community. And we all came to a realization together that that area really needed its own look. And so we are responding to the community and holding a meeting, and we're hoping people will come out, and any of you are welcome to come out and talk about the kinds of things that we need to work on or might need to work on along that southern end of the road. We will then be having another meeting sometime between January 7th and 17th to talk about the status of the Pine Tree Road north portion of the project, and I'll tell you more about that during the F&I report.
Well, can we just get the website, the 30 yeah. days website?
All again? Spelled out, the word 30. 30 days of fracking, F-R-A-C-K-I-N-G, mm-hmm. regs.com.
I tried it with the numbers and it went there anyway.
Oh, okay.
With
the number 30.
Yes. Yeah. And there are links to post it on Facebook and Twitter. So I feel free to hit those links and send it out to all your friends. There was some discussion on the site about whether it was okay to weigh in if you're from out of state, and the answer was yes. Comments won't be turned away, although obviously those from in-state carry more weight. And certainly if you have connections with people in counties where this is not an immediate problem, the Marcellus Shale, where you're not in the Marcellus Shale, please send it out to your friends and relatives and ask them to look at just even one of them and weigh in.
Well, since the health experts are all from out of state, I would think that anybody who's got something constructive to say, no matter where they live, ought to, contribute. Thank you very much, Carol. It's good to have that report. I've got Pat, and then don't know if there's anybody else.
I just wanted to add another comment to the things that have been said about the shootings in Connecticut. And that has to do with, as we look at responses from the community and from our nation, in addition to thinking about mental health in terms of adults in the community, I think we also need to remember that parents need support, that kids, as they're growing up, oftentimes have troubling behaviors that sometimes can be a precursor, sometimes not, but they need help identifying what constitutes a serious situation and resources to help them work through that with their young person. And the schools also need those kinds of resources. And it's one of the places that we do not put enough support in our communities to help our schools work with young people who are obviously troubled in some way as they're coming up through the school system. I'm not going to go into a lot of detail, but I do have some ideas about what I think could be done, of having taught kids in the school system for quite a number of years who were labeled as having emotional disturbance. But I would like to see that that need expressed if we're going to do something as a group, and I'd be happy to try to help with that too. Well,
thank you, Pat. Peter, and then Nathan.
Yesterday, I went to a meeting that I thought was singular. I'm sure it's never been mentioned before in this setting and probably never will again. But we all avidly watch the election results come in, particularly for president. We watch the TV, and it would come up. There'd be a map of the United States, and then at one point it said New York, and then there was a thing said Obama, and then another one that said Romney, and a check came on for New York, and they said, okay, now that gives New York 29 electoral votes, whatever that means. And we heard that all, and we're all aware of the fact that the United States is unique in the way it selects its leader by having this peculiar thing called the Electoral College, who the number of votes they get in the Electoral College determines who wins the election. So we all know that. No, by the way, nobody, as far as I know, in the world has ever copied that part of the American government. And so anyway, I guess what I probably, nobody really knows is that mythical number, that abstract number, 29 votes, actually refers to 29 people in New York who have been elected to get together and decide who they think would be the next president of the United States. There really are 29 different people who do that function, and I was lucky enough to be married to one of them. And so on Monday, for the 57th time since George Washington was elected president of the United States, 29 people, well, it probably started off as more like 40 people, but 29 people gathered in Albany, New York, to decide who they thought would be the best person to be president of the United States. And they really did. So we drove up to Albany, and I was lucky enough to be given a seat in the same room as a chauffeur or guest or whatever. And people sat around the table in this absolutely gorgeous room. If you've never seen it, you ought to go look at it sometime, namely the State Senate meeting room in the Capitol in Albany. And there around the table were the electors. Now, how does a person get to be an elector? Well, what happens is that 29 people were designated by the Democratic Party as the Democratic electors, and 29 people were designated by the Republican Party as the Republican electors. And when you voted, you know, you voted for one of those two groups of people, and the Democrats won. But it was actually an election. And they sat around, and it was very old-fashioned, where they first elected their chair of this. They convened the New York Electoral College for the 29th time or 59th time. And then they elected chair, and then they elected a secretary. Then they elected a teller, and I was pleased that my wife was also designated as teller, given the awesome responsibility of counting the votes. And then one by one, the people went up and signed their name and voted secretly and then put them into an envelope. And then the teller was called, and the teller opened the envelope and counted. 1, 2, 3, 4, and so forth, and said, Mr. President, Barack Obama receives 29 votes. And he said, thank you. And then, after that happened, then we all retired and went to the governor's mansion for a buffet lunch. So, that's my story, for whatever it's worth.
Thank you, Peter. So who was elected chair?
An education information.
Who was elected chair?
The lieutenant governor.
Okay.
Was the governor there?
What?
Was the governor there?
No, the governor was one of the, as you can imagine, the governor was one of the 29 elected representatives, electors, but he unfortunately was unable to appear, so someone was appointed in his stead.
Thank you, Peter. Great story. I think you're right. We probably won't hear it again. Nathan.
Yeah. Yes. You know, while I definitely echo folks' sentiments about what happened in the shootings in Connecticut, I was on the treadmill yesterday at the gym, and as I was watching, you know, CNN, it's amazing how you start crying, and then you look around and you see other people watching the same thing crying. I mean, it was terrible. But I actually just want to give some political insight into the issue of gun control. Right? Now, so. I believe that we need to have a comprehensive solution, no doubt, you know, or ideas, you know, so mental health and addressing even things like video games. But when it comes to gun control, you know, I think a lot of folks, and, you know, I do hear this in Ithaca a lot, people say, well, it's a no-brainer. Why don't we have more gun control, banning these semi-automatic weapons like AR-15s and all that? And the thing is that if you poll most Americans will say, like 65% of Americans will say that yes, they're in favor of more gun control. The problem is that when you ask that 65%, or what does it rank in your top issues? It's like the 10th issue, right? They care more, people care about, you know, the obvious things like the economy or ending overseas wars and things like that, but it's a low priority issue. Whereas if you ask folks that are against gun control, you know, that's, and they may be, and that's then only that 35%. If you ask them, is being against gun control your number one issue, your number two issue, three issue, it's often their top three issue. Okay? So, you know, that's why when you see these politicians, you're saying, why aren't they actually taking a stance against gun control? Right? That's what they're looking at. So I believe it's our responsibility as legislators by passing resolutions, but also as a community to, you know, not just say, oh my gosh, how can people not? I mean, how is it that people aren't supporting gun control? It's actually our responsibility to talk to our friends and our neighbors and our politicians and move that from being the 10th most important issue to really being top 3, 4, 5 issue, right? And because if you don't do that, you're not going to see movement on this issue. So that's why I commend the idea of bringing something forward. And I think it's important for us to push this discussion, because we need to make it not just something that we care about, but something that we're actually going to make a priority.
Thank you very much, Nathan. Anyone else? Frank.
Just a quick follow-up to Nathan's comment. Just as a reminder, if I'm not mistaken, this legislature and some of us supported, it was not unanimous, if I remember right, but we supported not supporting rifle hunting in this county earlier this year.
Type of rifle.
Say again?
It was the type of rifle. We did not allow... rifles that could shoot at longer distances.
I think that goes on the same line as perhaps Nathan is going. And I want to apologize to Carol. My concern for her health is what caused me to say that she should limit her exuberance this evening.
Take it, Carol.
You're good. You're really good.
Accept it, Carol. That's good. That's good. All right, anyone else? All right, well, I do have a couple things to report on. One is that we did make gun control, gun issues, reaction to Newtown, an issue yesterday with Joe Sempolinski, the district director from Congressman Tom Reed. He met with a few of us. I want to thank Joe, Frank, Jim, and Mike. That was who was there, right? Okay, for coming. We had a long list of items. We did talk about that. He said, Joe said, well, Sempolinski said it was, you know, an indictment of our mental health system. I couldn't agree more. On the other hand, I'm not sure how strongly the congressman has supported mental health funding. So that's a question to ask. We had a vigorous discussion about that, as well as a number of other issues. I think it was a good time to let him get to know us at a little bit more detailed level and hear the concerns that I think are felt by a broad swath of our community, and then have to actually answer them. He said that Congressman Reed has had he had four town hall meetings in another part of the district on Saturday. He will be having town hall meetings in Tompkins County. It is not clear whether they're going to have an office of any sort here. I think it was, he said they would have some kind of presence, maybe a couple days a week or a couple days a month or something like that. So that's something we'll keep working on. I think Joe sent out the agenda that we covered to everybody, but if he didn't get that, then let us know. We'll send that out. On the reaction to Newtown, this morning I wrote to Joe Peterstein and Ken Lansing asking about a gun buyback program, whether we could do something like that locally. Ken is out of town, but he responded that he'd sent a message to the state police to see what was involved, whether we could do that. We can take 30 guns out of somebody's hand, people's hands. I'm for doing whatever we can. I think about it in terms of, like, the nets on the bridges. If somebody really wants to commit suicide, they're going to do that. Even if the net would prevent them, they'll find another way. So same with an event like these murders. If somebody really wants to do it, they're going to find a way. But we don't have to make it so easy. So I think that's kind of the way I look at it. Another item, maybe parity in health care coverage. Mental health coverage is not given anywhere near. Lots of plans don't have any mental health visits allowed in their insurance policies. So that's another sort of practical issue that might make a difference. Yesterday's meeting, last night's meeting that was put on by a number of volunteers, but sponsored by TCOG, the Tompkins County Council of Governments, about the fracking regulations, very well attended. And I think it was one of the things that is so frustrating is that as a body, it appears we will not have the opportunity to make comments. You remember, we've passed resolutions on the scoping document. We passed resolutions on the first ESGUIS. We passed resolutions on the second ESGUIS. On this one, in order for staff are working very hard, Liz Cameron, the planning department, there's a committee at the Water Resources Council, there's a committee at the EMC. People are advisory boards and staff are working very hard to read these 300-some pages and make the careful comments that they need to make. That's usually what then comes to our committees, and then we talk about them, discuss them, approve them, bring them to the full legislature. Because this comment period is only 30 days, during a period when people have vacation time, when we don't have, and a lot of boards don't even meet, there's just literally no way for us to have the documents prepared by staff or advisory boards, have them even come to a special committee of health or PDAC, and then come to the January 3rd legislature meeting. We can't do that. The comment period is too short. I talked to Ed today about it. Frank has been working with Margie Rinaldo-Lee of the Water Resources Council. Liz Cameron's not even in the office till Thursday. I know that she's going to be working on it, but she doesn't have it ready. So here's what we can offer. I'll work over the break on a letter that might be sort of a cover letter. If we have their formal comments in hand by, say, January 9th or 10th, we can also develop a letter. I mean, I think our letter should also simply say, we object to this comment period of only 30 days on something that we're going to have to live with and implement, and over a holiday period when you've got religious and national holidays. So I'll be working on that and obviously send drafts around to everybody for your comments. So we will be able at least to give everybody here the opportunity to sign a letter as a joint statement, but we will not have the opportunity to pass anything. Unless somebody here wants to go ahead and draft actual comments and bring it to the legislature, you could get a title to Kathy by next Wednesday and get the copy, get the text of it to the office by, I don't know, Friday or Monday. But so you go look at the calendar and you see how almost impossible it is. Unless you already have something written, it's going to be very hard. So at any rate, that makes all the more important people's efforts to individually try to put in comments in whatever, 30 fracking days, 30 days of frackingregs.com and other websites as well. So I thought people might want to know what we'll be doing about it, and we're going to do what we can, but I don't see, until you look at me like...
I was thinking member-filed resolutions are possible. That's sort of what you just said.
If you can put something together. I mean, I can't promise to do that. So, but if anybody wants to do that, that would be great. So, finally, you may have seen this in the other room. We're the proud owners of one of the Togo Awards for 2012, Town Gown Awards from Community for Service and Commitment, from Cornell Community Relations for our partnership with the city and Cornell on the TCAT program. So, did everybody see it?
How much can we get for it?
I don't think I want to embarrass anybody by saying. Yeah, Pam?
Martha, did you say TCAD?
TCAT. I thought I said TCAT.
TCAT, okay.
The TCAT, you know, partnership. It was a week ago Saturday that they had the Town Gown Awards, a fun event. And so TCAT was recognized. Joe was there and made some great remarks. So if there are no questions.
Is that Sterling Silver?
Yeah, Mike. Yeah, sure.
Who was in attendance to receive her award? Were you there to receive her award?
Yeah.
Oh, nice.
It's great to be recognized. And
who were you wearing, Valentina?
Sorry, I couldn't help myself.
Something almost as fancy as this, Leslie, I'm sure. So anyway, we appreciate the award. We appreciate the recognition.
It's very nice.
All right. Is there no other questions or comments? County Administrator, Joe Marianne.
Time for a break.
What?
It's time for a break.
We have another hour.
Thanks, Martha. I just have a couple of things tonight. Just one really quick update. The budget is now available online. So if you or your constituents want to know how we spend our money, it's right there online for them. And just to make it easier for people to navigate through, when you open up that document and you find the table of contents on the first page, all you have to do is click on the page you want to see or the department you want to look at, and it takes you right there. So it's really, I think, a really good tool for anybody who wants to know about how we spend our money, and particularly for citizens that just want to know more about county government and where all that money goes and how we put it to good use. Second item, at the last meeting, I talked to you about the fourth meeting of the TCAD Funding Task Force, and I characterized it as a spirited meeting, as it was. I'm happy to tell you that the fifth meeting was a very productive meeting, and a report is being written by the task force that will be presented to PDAC, hopefully at the next meeting, which will describe a recommended funding strategy for TCAD that includes kind of a balanced approach to the challenges of TCAD's funding issues, that will in fact propose to use some room tax dollars to help address some of the needs at TCAD. It also requires the county to step up. So, again, it ended up with a unanimous recommendation that will be made to PDAC at the next meeting, assuming the report is done by that time. So that's it was a very good and very positive outcome of that whole process. I guess the last thing I'd say, Paula reminded me on the way in tonight that this is our last meeting. I celebrated because I thought it meant no more meetings at all for the rest of the year, but that's not true, but it's your last meeting of the year. Had I had more time or presence of mind, I probably would have done a year in review for tonight. I won't do that. I think you know that really at the beginning of every year, we try to look back. We will do that again in January to talk about the accomplishments that we've made. And I think every time we do that and we take stock of what's happened, it's a little surprising in terms of how much does get accomplished over the course of a very busy year. And I'm looking forward to doing that. But I do think that among the largest accomplishments that this county made over the course of the year, and this is all yours, is that I think we're among the few counties in New York State and maybe anywhere in the country that can look our citizens in the eye and tell them that the services they've come to depend on from this county are going to be there for them next year. And that is quite an accomplishment, and it really is the fruits of the labors that you have put into it over the past 3 or 4 years. This legislature, I think, is unique in being able to very candidly exchange differences of opinion and very civilly debate those differences and come to solutions that are balanced and that make sense for the community. And I think if all of us were more boastful, we might say that's a good example for a lot of other governments to follow, including some in Washington, D.C. So, again, we will have a more formal presentation of accomplishments over the course of 2012, but I do want to thank you for the work that you've done over the course of this year, and it really is a pleasure to be working with you on these things that lead to so many good accomplishments. So that's my report.
Thank you, Joe.
Thank you.
Any questions? Well, you do have the, you know, you can always look back at the year when you're entering the next one. That's easy to do.
We will.
Yeah, Frank.
Martha, Joe, I think we all appreciate what you just said about this legislature, but I think we need to say thanks to the staff, mm-hmm. not just the department heads, but your staff and everybody that helped us through it. The last couple of years have been a real challenge, and I think the leadership really showed from the departments and all of our staff.
Agreed, and I will be happy to pass that on to our staff.
Thanks.
County Attorney Jonathan Wood.
Thank you. I'm sure you all remember the Uniform Notice of Claim Act. That is the act which allows, among other things, for counties to be sued by somebody filing a notice of claim in the Secretary of State's office. The GO committee had authorized me to write a letter opposing that, and I reported that. It's probably close to a year ago now, and then TCOG also meeting wrote a letter unanimously opposing that, asking the governor to veto it. The reason why I mention it is because I got a call from the governor's office this morning, which said the governor signed the bill, I guess this morning or yesterday, but that he made certain changes to it, which they believe will make it less intolerable or less offensive. I'm not sure. They tried to go through them. It wasn't yet in writing, so I couldn't see it. But things which narrowed it effect, like you couldn't file it in any Secretary of State's office, only the one in Albany, that increasing the number of days that they would have to serve it and increasing the county time to respond, things like that. But basically, he signed the law and didn't veto it.
Oh, wow.
And that's my report.
Oh, well, good try. Any questions?
Good try.
That's too bad. David Squires, Finance Director.
I report that last week we always reach a milestone the second last week in a year because that's when we spend more money than any time during the year because at that time the retirement bill is due. Our payroll is due, Medicaid payments due, bond, a large debt service payment is due. So last week we dispersed over $13 million. I bring up the retirement because we are blessed, I guess, by New York State that our retirement bill includes the retirement bill for the library and the community college. And in order to pay the bill on time to get a discount, we paid it on Friday. The community college was unable to pay their share of the bill, which was like $1.2 million because a delay in state aid. So besides supporting, you know, the county is the biggest supporter of education, I guess you'd say, in the area.
Thank you, David. Any questions? All right. Thank you so much. Are there any resolutions to be added to or withdrawn from the agenda? Okay, I'll read the consent agenda. If you've got anything you would like removed, please let us know. Resolution A, ID 3883, 2013 budget adjustment, moving social services COPS contracts from 6070 to 6010. Resolution B, ID 3861, budget adjustment from highway fund balance to bridge contracts, Virgil Creek Dam, Town of Dryden. Resolution C, ID 3862, budget adjustment from civil engineer funded salary to senior sign mechanic underfunded salary, promotion to sign from sign mechanic highway division. Resolution D, ID 3878, authorization to accept a grant from the state archives. Resolution E, there's a revised, is this in people's packets? Yes, revised as adopted by committee, ID 3879, to amend Resolution 231 of December 20, 2011, determination and certification of county clerk's allowance, annual expenses for administering mortgage tax. Resolution F, ID 3886, correction of errors. Resolution G, ID 3888, designation of newspaper. Resolution H, ID 3849, authorizing Federal Transit Administration, Section 5316, job access and reverse commute, JARC, and Section 5317, new front freedom grants for 2013.
Oh.
What?
The word applications in the title.
No.
And then off.
Resolution I, ID 3858, authorizing Federal Transit Administration, Section 5311, Rural Capital Application for Tompkins Consolidated Area Transit Incorporated and Tompkins County for 2013-14. Resolution J, ID 3866, award of Way to Go Community Mobility Education Program Proposal to Cornell Cooperative Extension of Tompkins County Incorporated. Resolution K, ID 3847, Budget Adjustment Workforce Investment Board. Resolution L, hang in there, folks. We have just a few more. Resolution L, ID 3827, Workers' Compensation Budget and Apportionment Mutual Self-Insurance Plan. Resolution M, ID 3828, delegating to the Finance Director of the County of Tompkins, New York, the power to authorize the issuance of and to sell $10 million in revenue anticipation notes of said county in anticipation of receipt of state aid during the fiscal year of said county, commencing January 1st, 2013. Resolution N, ID 3843, implementation of the 2013 budget departmental fees. Resolution O, ID 3885, authorization to disperse funds, county administration. Resolution P, ID 3887, delegation of authority to authorize certain tax and solid waste fee refunds under $500. And revised Resolution Q, ID 3895, authorizing payments for community college operating budget. And I have quite a few appointments. Water Resources Council, Frank Proto, Darby Kiley, John Anderson, Joan Jerkovich, Marjorie Rinaldo Lee, R. Barry Goodrich, Sarah Johnson Dwyer, Ed Bugliosi, Rick Manning, and Scott Carpenter. Planning Advisory Board, Richard Coogan, Susan Costantini, and Rick Couture. Environmental Management Council, James McGarry. Strategic Tourism Planning Board, Ann Sheila Kellerman, Stephen Nunley, Myram Musco, Stephen Hugo, Anthony Hobson, and Sue Perlgut. Board of Health, Patricia Meinhart and James McMillan. Workforce Diversity and Inclusion Committee, Anita Fitzpatrick, Lisa Holmes. Office for the Aging Advisory Committee, Charlie Hart. Board of Human Rights Commissioners, Barbara Komen. Personal Emergency Response Service Advisory Board, Edward Bergman and Dorothy Deitch. Mental Health Subcommittee, Patricia Zalewski. Traffic Safety Committee, Kenneth Lansing. Pending committee action, these all went through. Air Services Board, John Gutenberger. Hillview Road Landfill Citizens Advisory Committee, Brian Eden. Workforce Diversity and Inclusion Committee, Jamaica Breedlove and Marsha Lynch. Library Board of Trustees, Bruce Ryan and Peter McCracken. Can I get a motion on the consent agenda? Moved by Frank, seconded by Leslin. All in favor, please raise your hand. Any opposed? Can I sit down now? That's unanimous. Okay. I want to move things around a little bit and go to the Facilities and Infrastructure Committee, Carol Chalk, Chair.
Thank you, Martha. I think I'll just start telling people. I started before to tell people about the Pine Tree Road presentation. It's our most recent meeting. Was a special meeting just yesterday. And the consultants, Chuck White from Barton and LeJudis, came and presented to us the many options that they have come up with to try to tackle building a trail and fixing up the bridge in the Pine Tree Road North area. There's a 280-page report. There's a copy in the back room. There's a copy at the public library. I think they've done a very nice job of setting out all the objectives, the community, the factors in the community that we needed to consider. And then they have taken, they basically divided the whole length of the project into three or four sections, three and two halves. There's the northern part of the trail from the bridge towards Cornell University, and they've come up with various options that might be possible and have selected among those options two that they recommend. Then the bridge itself, they've come up with several options and have recommended which one they think would be best there. And then they've taken the longer portion of the trail, the area from the bridge all the way up to Maple Avenue, and have recommended, I think, something like 16, they've examined something like 16 different options of ways to route the trail at different grades. And then they've taken all of those different sub-recommendations and said, okay, how could you put together the northern end, the bridge, and the southern end so that it matches up, so that it would be a viable trail? And so now they've come up with four options. Among all those alternatives, they've come up with four options that we can focus on and talk about the pros and cons. And so what they did at this last meeting was just present all of this. It's a lot of material. It's still going to take time for us, the committee members, to go back and look at the report and then come back, have a community meeting, and then really focus on which of those options we'd like to entertain. So we've done that. We at the meeting before that, we passed the two resolutions that were on the consent agenda and the one that I'm bringing to you now. And I think I would like to move the revised edition that's in your packets. There's a suggestion. It really is just changes the order of the wording. It was recommended by Legislator Kiefer. Ban the use of hydrofracking byproduct brine on county roads and property. And it is the version that in the first resolved, it will read, resolved on recommendation of the Facilities and Infrastructure Committee that Tompkins County hereby bans the spraying, depositing, placing of all hydrofracking byproducts, including brine liquid, upon roads and properties for which Tompkins County is responsible. And this prohibition will be reflected in relevant bidding documents and contracts. And I so move.
Second by Dooley. Discussion. Mike.
Carol, thanks for that clarification that you have on this. I'm kind of interested to know whether we, as a county, can pass a local law that would allow or would ban this use on any of the roads in Tompkins County. We may not be able to do it on the state highways, but certainly town and village streets and city streets. So I'm interested in knowing about that.
So that is something that I'm actually looking into. The committee felt, and I felt, that it was important to get this passed first. We're entering snow season. That brine product, as a result of hydrofracking, is out there in the market. It's cheaper to use than the products we've been using. And I think in some cases it's there for the taking. But we just wanted to make clear to our own staff and to any contractors that we hire. And it's not just for roads. This stuff is also being used on building projects to keep dust down on building projects. So for now, we wanted quite quickly make sure that as the snow season comes in, that we have this on our books. We're looking for templates and jurisdiction. I've had a conversation with Frank Krupa, who's looking into, is it only up to New York State to choose a list of chemicals that can be banned within New York State, or is there a way we can do this? I just heard that Westchester County passed something, and so I will look into what they passed and what the basis of their law is, and it will either be me working with Jonathan or maybe Frank will get involved. Frank Frodo here will get involved along with Frank Krupa, because it may come through the health department if it's something that's to preserve public health. It's also maybe could be PDEC, because maybe it can be done through the avenue of protecting our waterways, because this stuff is going to be out there for people to buy to use on their driveways. And from there, it makes its way into our waterways. So I'm hoping that in the future we'll be able to come back with something more stringent and that operates throughout the county. I also thought about all the other roads within the county, and I just felt that before taking this to TCOG and getting the responses from towns, that it would be a little presumptuous of us to say something for the towns themselves, but I'm hoping that this, if we pass it tonight, will go to TCOG and that the towns will be able to use it as a template for themselves.
Thank you.
Jim?
Just a comment. On Friday, I was on the north end of the Palisades Parkway and in Rockland County, and I'm riding along with my shiny car, and in the right-hand lane, there's a New York State truck with a 1,000-gallon tank of water or something, a liquid, in the back. And it's pretty good-looking liquid, and it was like painting the road. And so I don't know, the temperature was 55 degrees, and we were, all the cars were in the left lane because none of us wanted to get in it, and not knowing what it was. So I called DOT when I got to the city and got a runaround like you can't believe, and I still have not heard back from them, but it's like now it's an issue with me, and I want to find out what they were dropping on the road. But it was interesting because the road was just beautifully wet. And if you've ever been on Palisades, it's worn out. You know, there's stones are coming up through the concrete, and it was amazing. So they may have already started that little thing in Rockland County.
Thank you, Jim. Frank.
Thanks, Martha. Carol, we have and we oversee it through the planning department and also through the Water Resources Council. We have a stormwater set of regulations, and there are certain towns that are MS4s, and the county is an MS4. The spreading of this may be because we have to be careful what goes into the roadside ditches, and that falls under the stormwater regs.
Which we have jurisdiction.
We have some sway over that. You may want to pursue that. I don't know if Jonathan might be able to help you out with that or not, but I know that we pass through the WRC sample regs that a lot of the towns are using, and you may have some ammunition there if you want to pursue it.
And Kathy Arnold, legislator from Cortland County, had looked into this last winter, and she has some more information, too. I think there's some of it comes from, I don't know, a vertical well, or it's just salt storage. It's
it comes off of maybe the salt, like the salt caverns that we have. I don't understand exactly, but you could check with her. But when she looked into it, whatever it was that they were using, she said it was deemed to be better than, you know, regular road salt because it is more effective. They put it on before the storm, and I don't know, about 55 degrees, but that's way before a storm. By putting it on, by pre-treating, then they can use less salt during the storm. So the net effect is deemed to be beneficial. Now, that may be true if it's one kind of fluid, but if it's fracking fluid, I think there's a whole other smoke.
I want to make it clear that our highway department wanted to make clear that we are not talking about banning the use of salt on the roads. We're talking about banning the use or deciding not to use hydrofract wastewater that contains chemicals in addition to the salt, to the chloride that we would like to have on the roads to protect from the ice. It will not contain the other chemicals, and it will not be radioactive. So, I think these are different issues, mm-hmm. whether the use of the liquid versus the salt crystals.
Mm-hmm. Are we ready to vote? Jim, was that you want to talk or ready to vote?
I'm ready to vote.
Okay. All in favor, resolution R with a slight change. Raise your hand. Any opposed? That's unanimous. Very good. Thanks very much, Carol. This is great.
I don't think I have anything else in my report. Anybody else from the committee have anything I'm leaving out? Okay, thank you very much.
Do people know that the maps and the stuff are out there? You can tell
Well, the report is out there, and there are also now some extra copies, I think, of just the maps themselves, if you'd like to look at the routes.
On Pine Tree Road.
On Pine Tree Road, yes. And anybody who'd like an electronic copy of the full report, actually, maybe we should just have that sent out to the rest of the legislature in case people want to see it. It's electronic, so we're not using a lot of paper.
All right. Thanks very much, Carol. I'd like to pay attention to staff in the back there. I'd like to see if we could go to the Capital Plan Review Committee. Mike Lane, Chair.
Thank you. The Capital Plan Review Committee met just prior to this meeting, and we'll be meeting again tomorrow for a regular meeting. But today we passed the resolution that's in front of you to adopt the 20-year capital plan. Last meeting, we had a presentation from Ed Marks, our director of planning, about this, something the committee's been working on for the better part of two, maybe almost 3 years, and it's time to adopt it. The revised resolution I have in front of me, as you notice, just adds the designation 20-year capital plan. This is a plan, but it is an adoption of a plan, which means that it'll be taken into consideration as budgeting proceeds in 2013. There was one question came up this afternoon having to do, you have a large version of the plan figures on your desks this afternoon. Thanks, helps. There's so many figures. Getting a little bigger typeface helps. A question about the aquifer study, which this legislature decided during the budget process to make a target rather than a sort of one time. It still seems like it needs to be in this budget plan. I'm sorry, this capital program plan. We will talk about it a little bit tomorrow, but it was a general consensus as time was running out this afternoon that it should stay here in the plan.
And
I'd like to move that resolution.
Resolution S as revised, seconded by Frank. Discussion. Dooley?
Should the regular meeting of the Capital Plan Review Committee decide something else about the aquifer study? How does one make a change now in this document?
I suspect the plan could be amended.
that would mean acting on it at CPR and then bringing it back to the next legislature.
I think so. Okay. I think that'd be the proper way to do it.
Any other discussion? Carol?
So I have some concerns about the capital plan. And they're concerns that I had started to raise on that committee. I had started to raise them before I got hit and didn't have a chance then to come back and explore them more fully. But I want to raise them here, particularly in light of the kinds of things we were just talking about related to the shooting last Friday. To the extent that we make a more dedicated funding stream or put things in a capital plan, we are saying that these things are enough more important than some of the other things that we're doing that we're going to make sure to dedicate in advance, in this case 20 years in advance. Now I know that we're not held to spending that amount exactly every year, but it's a guidance. But what this capital plan does is, in addition to the buildings and the specific roads and bridge projects and a few others that we know we have in the works and that we might want to have in the works in the future, we've included pretty large sums for some deferred maintenance in various areas and for things like telephone. And I believe in doing that. I think those things are all important, and I'd like to do them. But in light of the kinds of things that are going on today in society, I also think that we ought to be catching up on some of our deferred maintenance related to mental health, related to public health, and related to social services. I'm troubled by the notion that we agree to put aside money for these physical things and in addition include them in our operating budget as well. But somehow when it comes to people, we're deciding, we'll just keep that in the operating budget after what we've already dedicated and after what we've put aside for capital. And so I just am uncomfortable doing that that way this year. I thought about shooting in the dark for a figure to put in to amend, to say, okay, if we're going to say $2.4 million in each of three rounds for facilities future deferred maintenance, let's put in $2.4 million over the course of the 20 years and ask our staff to come back and work on how we would divide that among mental health, social health, and public health. It would be one way to handle it if there were any sympathy for that. So I'll let you comment, and I think at this point I may vote against this unless I hear some ideas about how to tackle it.
We have Brian, Peter, then Mike.
That stuff's all well, but it's not capital. It has nothing to do with capital expenditures. There's no depreciation on it. There's no. Now you can have another plan, which deals with appropriations to anything. But as far as capital plan, the stuff that you're talking about is not capital plan.
Yeah, well, it's just that we have stuff in here that isn't specifically capital either.
Peter?
Such as what?
Right, well, to me, whether it's called capital or not, I don't even know exactly what capital means, but I understand something very different about deferred maintenance and highway maintenance to mental health problems. And the point is, you can write down what you need for the latter two, given a certain level of excellence that you've decided. There's a pretty much a one-to-one correspondence of what you spend to what's going to happen. For instance, you say you have to replace a computer every 5 years. You know that. And you know that if you replace the computer every 5 years, then your computing capability will be okay, And if you let it go out longer, then you can expect to find failures in your ability to do that. It's not, that's not the same case with the kind of social problems that we deal with. It's hard to translate them into money, to say when is enough, and so forth. So I think that's a fundamental difference, and that's why it's easier to plan for these kind of less appealing items, like replacing computers and roads and bridges, than it is for solving social problems like the number of guns and shootings there are in America. But having said that, I would like to, the question I wanted to ask was, what do these numbers in dollars translate into? Namely, there's a sort of a level of, presumably if you spend a certain amount of money, that means at all the time as it goes on, if you do this forever, then your roads are, I don't know what, A class, B class, C class, or something like that. And I wonder, is there any way when you could, that you could translate these numbers into that language for me? I would like to know it. I mean, for instance, I'm wondering a little bit why the deferred maintenance goes on at the same level, but the highway maintenance round 1, 2, and 3 are not constant over that period of time. So that's one number that struck my that got my attention. So that's I'm sorry, a very general question.
Joe, you want to take a shot at that?
Well, let me hit the second one first, and I may ask for Ed's help on some of the kind of the standards that we hope to achieve through these investments. But on the highway, the reason the highway is structured the way it is, starting low and ending higher, it really reflects the attempt to find balance in this plan. In terms of capital capacity and what we kind of the tolerance we think to raise taxes over the next several years, the goal was to keep spending within that 0.75% increase in the first 2 years and then 0.5% thereafter. And we couldn't maintain those money thresholds if we had made highway spending kind of the equal approach that we did with facilities. So I think the number that we looked at on highways, Ed, was it $1.8 million a year? Was that the standard of investment to keep highways at a high level of quality? So the goal was $1.8 million a year. And if you look at the total 20-year plan, that is the average investment every year. But we didn't have the capacity in the first five-year block of spending here to do that much. So we started small. We went from $6 million to $9 million to $12 million to fit within the fiscal parameters that had been set here. So that was the balance on highways. Now, with respect to the standard of quality on these areas, Ed, do you want to speak to that?
Sure. Highway, in the original plan, we had set a standard of a rating, average rating, I believe it was 7 on a scale of 10, which is good quality, but still, you know, not perfect by any means. And that was kind of the target. Also maintaining, obviously, our bridges and keeping them open, the ones that we still have open. We have a couple that aren't anymore. And on the facilities, it was shooting toward the goal of making the scheduled maintenance at the time that it's scheduled. Otherwise, if a roof has a life of 20 years, useful life, that you would schedule the replacement at 20 years so that you don't end up at 22 years and you've got a winter and a leaking roof and an emergency, you know, building that gets closed or portion of it's not usable. So that's basically the approach.
And what's the long term of this thing? What's equilibrium? How much are we going to be spending a year on?
Well, that's what the plan tries to establish, is the equilibrium. In the appendices of the plan are actually listed the things that would be done in facilities over that period of time. For each five-year period, there's a list of the things that would be scheduled to do by building. And honestly, the number is larger in the early years than we've got, so we'll still be playing some catch-up over time, but hopefully over time we would get to the point where we would reach that equilibrium where we're making the maintenance, the major component maintenance, at the time that the life of the component is scheduled to be past its useful life.
And while you're there, would you define in our fiscal policy and capital policy, what does capital mean? What kind of project is a capital project?
It's simply put, I guess, any improvement to our physical infrastructure that involves an expenditure of $100,000 or more, or for which we borrow money. That's the basic definition. I think in the case of the aquifer study, we've kind of extended that to consider our kind of natural infrastructure that we're trying to protect through that long-term investment of what was a 20-year commitment when we started with it, and that's why that was included in the capital plan at the time.
And physical infrastructure includes equipment?
Long-lived lifed equipment, buildings, roads, things of that nature. Okay. For the county, that's pretty much what it consists of.
Okay, thank you. I've got Mike and then Pam.
I think what needed to be said is pretty much said. A lot of this stuff is bonded, and when we make the commitment to build a building, we've got to pay for it.
Pam?
Huh. Well, I am somebody who recognizes the need to keep our buildings in reasonable shape and our roads in reasonable shape. We need to take care of what we have. We need to, for safety, for a lot of different reasons. But I would just like to point out, this is in reference to what Carol had just said, is that there is something in the way that we have organized ourselves as a society that values the physical structure, which as we should, and in a way we value less the human beings in that society. I mean, I think if you look at what happened with the Hurricane Sandy in New York City, for years the city had been warned and the state had been warned about the rising water levels, and that the problem with flooding is going to be an ongoing one, and the potential for a disaster such as occurred was increasing, and really basically nobody did anything. So I mean, there was a real failure in planning for capital capital needs and the future. But I would also like, I also think that what happened in Connecticut presents a similar analogy with our human capital, our human beings in our society, and how we treat them, and how we plan for the future of our children in our society. I think that we've all pointed to a number of things that failed in that situation, and so I appreciate what Carol has said here. I think that it's important. I think it's an enormous issue. I think that it is worth looking at. I will vote for this plan as it is, but I really appreciate you bringing it up because I think it's important.
Julie.
Yeah, I think Carol is right to point these things out to us. I think it would be a mistake to vote against the 20-year capital plan, because we need that. And if we follow this blueprint with occasional modifications, it means that at budget time we can spend the majority of our effort considering what you were pointing out we need to spend more time thinking about and funding. And I hope that that would be the result of this. I don't think that it makes sense to try to force health or human services into a capital program format. It doesn't make sense in terms of definitions, but it certainly needs the attention that you pointed out.
Carol.
Yeah, so I want to be really clear that there's not one thing in this plan that I really want us to take out in order to do what I'm talking about. My concern is, Joe just explained to us that we don't have the capacity to put this kind of money into our budget in the early years. Well, why don't we? We don't because we have other things we need to be spending money on. And if we're going to have the continue to spend, if we have a balance of expenditures that include a healthy balance towards people and the needs of people, then we can't afford to do this physical plan, this capital plan. I mean, that's what we're being told in the early years. So because we can't afford it now, is that a reason to say, okay, well, 3 years from now and 4 years from now and up to 20 years from now, we're going to encumber, we're not encumbering it yet, but that we're going to have in our minds that this money is sacrosanct and we won't talk about it. It comes off the top before we start talking about the operating budget. So I just don't see how, several years from now, we'll be able to still have the money to do what we're doing for human services if we pass this tonight. Unless, Joe, you can tell me that somehow we'd be getting blood out of stone then.
All I can tell you is that it's a plan. That's a blueprint. And if conditions hold as they are today, then this is a plan that we could follow and that would result in our infrastructure being maintained and huge investments that the community's made over time being preserved. Plans change when conditions change. And I think as you are concerned about human service spending, if you listen to Ed Marks, he's concerned about what happens if those human service needs do escalate. And will we stay true to this plan? Because we had a similar plan before, and when the economy collapsed, we had to put our money into human services to the detriment of the infrastructure. So, again, I think what all of you know is it makes a heck of a lot of sense to have a plan like this to establish where you want to go, general direction, where you think the need lies. But every year, as we come to you and say, can we spend money to build this bridge or fix this building, you still need to give it your approval, and you will do that within the context of that time. So you'll still have the opportunity to say it either does or doesn't fit the context of our time. So we haven't really precluded any option in the future. We're just, again, trying to get a sense of direction and a blueprint for an investment policy over the next 20 years.
Jim?
All right. Let me just point out the three biggest items in our budget besides capital plan are our human service items. The sheriff's department and jail comes in there fourth, I think. But we spend all our money in DSS, mental health, and the health department. I view this list as a wish list in a sense. And Joe took many of the words out of my mouth in the fact that, when the economy went south, we had grand plans for capital improvement, we had to spend it on other things. The only thing I can say to anyone who's listening, we can't, in this legislature, cure the ills of the world. We can remind people we are doing a job, and we are doing our job as well as we can, given the dollars that we have. There are other people, other governments in this country who have to get involved in this. And, it's pretty obvious what's happened, and mental health is taking a hit for many years in some areas. And I'll just say my own personal item here. During the budget process, I voted against the thing that Martha wanted to do where you were going to fix the time limit of people being able to report and get appointments. In hindsight, that was probably a bad vote, given the point of, what's going on now and the kinds of things that we're needing to do. So in one sense, I'm glad that we have that. We were able to deal with some of the kinds of issues that were the cause of what was going on, not only there, but in three or four other pretty random shooting kinds of things all around the country. So, I want to support this, of course, but I clearly understand that at some point, if something bigger comes up, some of this is going to have to be put aside, and we'll have to deal with the human service needs that is our job if we look at what county legislators say.
All
Okay, are we ready to vote? All right, all in favor of resolution, revised resolution S? Please raise your hand. Opposed. That passes 13 to 1.
That completes my report.
And you have a meeting tomorrow. Pat.
I have a question for Mike, but it doesn't have to do with the resolution. May I have something?
Of course.
Thank you. On the courthouse renovations, there was an item that I had asked you about. I was wondering what's happened with that. It has to do with access to the building.
The architects are coming to the meeting tomorrow, and that question will be poised.
Okay.
I don't have a response yet.
Okay.
Questions about the handicap access.
Yes.
Yeah.
Thank you.
And chairs.
There are three chairs, another three chairs to look at in the board office. Everyone's invited to try them out.
But I don't think, I'm looking at the clock.
They're here
in the other room. We're looking at the clock. I'd like to accommodate Joe back there, Turcotte, with the mortgage recording tax mess item. You want to do a PowerPoint?
Well, I was going to introduce the resolution and speak to it, and then Joe was going to do a short PowerPoint.
Right. I'm looking at the clock. I'm wondering if we should take our break now, quick break now, because of Jim the Lizard's.
So can we move it up so that...
I was going to do it next. So okay. The question is, can we finish it in 12 minutes?
Should be a relatively quick one, shouldn't it?
Okay. All right. Let's go to the PDEC resolution.
Okay.
It's out of PDEC. Go ahead.
Okay.
Will.
I'm sorry. I'm going to move...
So can I move it?
I'm going to yield to Pam, who developed this and asked me very nicely if she could be the mover, and I apologize.
That's okay. I would like to move Resolution T, ID 3859, requesting New York State to authorize the dedication of revenues produced by the imposition of a 25-cent per $100 additional tax, mortgage recording tax, for mass transportation purposes, and I so move.
Seconded by Peter. Do you want to discuss it?
Well, yes. I just wanted to say that this is a resolution that has been a long time coming. Last fall, when we were looking at TCAD and the growing deficit and the depleting reserve fund, I sat down with Joe Mariana and Jonathan Wood to talk about things that we might do, and we looked at the mortgage recording tax as a possibility, because if TCAT was a public authority, that is where part of their funding would come from. We spent a year looking at this. It was quite remarkable, quite a journey, and it turned out that we, of course, can do this without having to go for authorization to do it, but there are other pieces. Anyway, Joe is going to go into greater detail about this. But I just wanted to say to everybody that this is a way for us to more ensure the future of our public transportation system in Tompkins County. We have a remarkable transportation system, as I have been saying constantly, for a long time, and they are nationally known, nationally recognized, but that is in jeopardy because of sort of the structural deficits that we have are occurring. Unfortunately, with our partners, the good thing about our partners are myriad, many good things, but the weakness is that we are dependent on the weakest members. Is the one that dictates the amount that the partners contribute. So this is a way to look at it without becoming a public authority, but using the taxing authority that we have to to use it for our transportation system, not dissimilarly to the way that a public authority would. So I would like to yield this to Joe now so that he can go through his little PowerPoint in more detail.
You stressed short a few times now, so I'll be concise here. In fact, if there are 8 votes, I'll spare you this entirely if you'd like. We've sent you a fair amount of information on the mortgage tax over the past couple of weeks, just to give you background. And in looking at all that, I thought it made sense, and Pam agreed, that we really owe you a concise summary of what we are talking about here and what is represented by the resolution. So with a few slides, I hope we can do that. With respect to background, kind of where are we now? There is a current mortgage recording tax, as you all know. It's currently 0.75%. What that means is 75 cents per hundred of mortgage. We don't really get any of the proceeds of that. We get some administrative fees, but 0.5% of that rate goes to municipalities based on where that mortgage was originated. The other quarter percent goes to the state to support the Sunny May program that aids first-time homebuyers. What that means is on a $100,000 mortgage, currently you're paying $750 on that mortgage and mortgage recording taxes. Right now, we are among the lowest in New York State, and Jackie Kippel is trying to email me right now, as you can see on here. But 46 out of the 57 upstate counties already have mortgage recording tax rates of 1% or more, and again, we're at 0.75% right now. Graphically, there's where we are relative to the rest of the 57 other counties in the state. It's a tricky tax. Pam was accurate in saying we've taken a full year to try to fully understand how this somewhat unusual tax works. There are 4 categories of mortgage recording tax that are in place. The first is called the basic rate. That's that 0.5% that goes to municipalities, and everybody does it. And I think it's by law everybody does that, so all 57 counties levy that 0.5%. The next one is called the special additional tax. That's that 0.25% that goes to Sunny May. Again, all 57 counties levy that. The third category is called local. You recall this because we tried to have that local tax increased a couple of times. It's 0.25% in most counties, and I footnoted those two where it's different. And 23 counties have put that tax in place. That's a county tax. So when the state says you can levy that 0.25%, that money goes to counties. That's not the one that we're talking about tonight. We're talking about what's technically called the additional tax, the 4th of 4 categories of mortgage recording tax. It's 0.25% in most counties, and again, I footnote that in the counties that are in the Metropolitan Transit Authority and downstate, they pay a 0.3% amount. In the upstate counties, it's 0.25%. And off to the right, you can see how that money is put to use. 24 of the 36 counties who have that tax in place dedicate that money to their transportation operations. I believe that in every case, as Pam has said, those are transportation authorities, and by rights, that money goes right to that operation. In 12 counties, they put it to other purposes. Quickly, to show you how that breaks down. Again, 24 counties and the city of New York dedicates the money to mass transportation. 6 counties have tied that money to specific county capital projects. Many of those were jails built a long time ago. 3 counties have had the state authorize the money coming into their general fund. And 3 have had the state designate the money for use in supporting community colleges. So that's where the 36 counties are. Again, 24 of those devoted to mass transportation. Here's the unique feature of this additional tax, this 4th of the 4 categories. We can unilaterally levy the tax. We don't need the state to approve our imposition of the tax. That's a lot different than the local tax that we talked about last time. The state had to approve us doing it. And again, this is where we had to spend a lot of time with a lot of lawyers to figure out how this works. But we can unilaterally levy this tax. However, we can levy it, but without the state dedicating where the money goes, and there's a bit of a difference of opinion here, the money that's produced by that tax either goes to New York State or to municipalities within the county. Okay, so it doesn't come to the county. It goes to either the state or, according to the comptroller's office, to municipalities within the county. So,
what does New York State dedication mean?
It goes directly to Albany. And again, one reading of the law says that it would go to Albany. We've had some conversations in some depth with the state comptroller's office. They think the money would, in fact, come back to municipalities within Tompkins County. I think all we can do tonight is acknowledge the ambiguity and say it doesn't come to us without a dedication of its purpose. The proposed use that we're here tonight to talk about in the resolution is to dedicate the money for mass transportation to support TCAT. Why are we doing that? Pam already highlighted this. TCAT's operating costs continue to escalate beyond what can be supported by aid and fares. Here's the big one. Historically, buying things like buses and making capital improvements in the system have been supported largely by congressional earmarks. And Congressman Hinchey was very helpful in getting a lot of the purchases of equipment lined up for us. There aren't any congressional earmarks anymore. We heard it as recently as yesterday from Congressman Reed's representative that there are no earmarks. So our traditional source of capital support for TCAT doesn't exist, and we're not aware of any formula-based replacement of those earmarks. So the combination of those two things, operating and capital, means that TCAT is going to require increasing contributions from the city, the county, and Cornell, the three sponsor partners. And what that means is that represents, in my opinion, and I think anyone who looks at this, a significant threat to the county's property tax stability. As we look to the next 5 years at the things that can really upset the apple cart in terms of our own property tax, I would rank this as probably the highest single volatile item that we have to deal with. And Pam made this point clearly. There's a lot of good things about the partnership and the equal shares approach. But the future of TCAT is only as strong as its weakest partner. So if the county or the city or Cornell finds itself in a position that it can't make contributions to support these operating and capital costs, they simply can't be made the way the structure currently works. In terms of what we're looking at in terms of numbers, this is from TCAT's projections, projected operating deficit of $162 going up to almost $300,000 over the next 3 years. In terms of capital needs, you can see how they line up there. It's a total of $13.3 million over a five-year period. This does not include the significant increase or replacement of the facility. In fact, more than half of it is just for vehicles, buses. So these aren't elaborate capital projects. These are buses that we're talking about here that has an unmet need. Right.
16 full-size buses at $380,000 a pop and four smaller buses.
So, again, without a mortgage tax, we need to be concerned about stress on the property tax. With the mortgage tax, a quarter point, we estimate the yield of $850,000 annually from that. How would it be used? The way it's been approached to date is each of the three partners would stay where they are. So we would sustain our contributions each that are currently $940,000. The new revenue produced by the mortgage recording tax would be dedicated to TCAT. That money would be for general purpose, so a part of it would help them cover operating gaps. The balance would be available to address capital needs. Now, kind of the caveat there is a local discussion. This is something that we will need to talk about. We've envisioned taking 15% of the proceeds and retaining it with the county. We would then dedicate that money to help pay a piece of that $940,000 contribution we make. So it would really help offset some of the property tax support currently dedicated for TCAT. It stays with mass transportation, though. So in terms of next step, and this is it, we need to seek state authorization to dedicate the proceeds to mass transportation. That's our next step, and that's what your resolution would do. It would begin that process of requesting that kind of a dedication. And that's really a summary of a lot of information that has been developed and that we try to present to you over the past few weeks.
Okay, first, can I ask Joe, the so 850 minus 127, so the net to TCAT annually is what?
Is in the low $700,000 range.
Okay. All right, I've got.
And that would grow over time. Presumably, as property values increase, that would grow over time as well.
Okay. All right. Peter, Brian, Mike, and Jim.
Joe, what happens to that 15% that doesn't go there?
Yeah, the county would retain that, and we would then use that money to help pay for our ongoing contribution to TCAT. So right now we pay $940,000.
Okay.
Thank you.
Ryan.
Joe, can you flip back to the capital expenses for a sec? I got lost there. You had that one. So I see that total figure, right. And then flip it to the next one. But you said the difference in there was not for the facility. What's the rest of it? It's like six.
Yeah, included in the information that we've distributed was the capital plan. Let me see if I can find it in my notes. And Joe's here. There's a variety of things like bus shelters, IT needs, things like that that fill in the gap between that $7.3 million and the $13.3. What's not in here, We've been talking over the last couple of years about the need to make substantial modifications and improvements to the existing facility, the bus garage. That's not in this set of numbers.
That's not in the 13.3.
No, that's correct.
So 6 million is what again?
I have it right.
You've
here.
Got it? Okay, great.
Do we have it somewhere?
Yeah.
Do we have
it? Oh, I'm sorry, you do.
It's on the... They do? They have all of it?
Yeah, in your email, you should have gotten something that looks like this. If you didn't, I brought copies in case this came up.
On the front it says additional mortgage recording tax. Well, for example, $3 million is for this whole database system that we're putting together for bus stops, for people, scheduling, service department, operations, dispatch, reporting analysis, passenger amenities, and bus stop database. That adds up to $3 million over 5 years. This is over 5 years. That's the biggest other one. $600,000 for replace a lift. Hybrid battery replacement, $240,000. I mean, these are expensive batteries.
Okay. Well, you don't have to read them to me. I can look them up. I was just that just seemed like it was worthy of a question.
And let me see if I can just add a couple more items to that. It's not as if there's no money going into the facility. For example, there's an HVAC system improvement that's fairly large, a $200,000 improvement. There's a roof. There are things like that. But in terms of that expansion of the existing facility,
mm-hmm.
after I think it's been there for, 25 years or so?
Four.
So there needs to be a major renovation and probably expansion of it. Multiple millions of dollars, that's not in here.
I was always under the impression the discussion was more... There's no sense throwing good bunny after bad, and that the whole thing would move somewhere, like a new facility somewhere. Or that's still we don't know.
We don't know. The problem is that the roof is 20 years old. Joe.
Yeah, I think to answer your question, yeah. We have two studies that are going on. One is the actual facility as it sits today, what's got to be done to maintain that facility, but also the concept of expansion. So what people will be looking at, consultants will be looking at is A, expanding the existing building on our site, or B, just starting over somewhere else and building a much larger facility.
So there's really two issues here. There's one, maintaining what we have, and then the second one is if we go larger, expanding, or a new facility. And the money that's up here mainly is fixing things that are popping up today, knowing their roof has to be replaced, and items like that. Very similar to your capital plan you laid out tonight for the county. We did the same thing at TCAP for 5 years.
Okay. Joe, do you have copies of that? I didn't
I do.
Print that out.
I do.
So I, other
I think I made enough
okay.
For everyone.
Okay. We've got a lot of people lined up, but I wonder if we can give Jim Blizzard a break and take our recess now, or should we keep going? I mean, this is we're just kind of getting started on this. I think we need to take a break. All right.
We didn't get it done in 12 minutes.
No, that's all right. It was a great PowerPoint show, really.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Please be back in your seats at 9:45.
Very succinct.
Thank you.